DBHDD is reminding Georgians to ask their doctor about alternatives to opioid pain medication. Alternatives like over-the-counter medications and physical therapy can be used to manage pain. More information at opioidresponse.info.
Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Wednesday, February 26th. I'm Orlando Montoya. This podcast features the latest reports from the GPB News team. You can send feedback or story tips to us at georgiatoday@gpb.org. Coming up on this episode, Georgia cotton growers are projected to grow 21% less cotton this year. Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens delivers his annual State of the City business address. And Georgia lawmakers work to address a statewide teacher shortage.
And it's a real issue, because if we don't have teachers, we don't have good teachers, we're not going to have students that's learning.
These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. Georgia cotton growers are projected to plant about 800,000 acres of the crop this spring, what some are calling an alarming 21% decline from the previous year. The numbers come from the National Cotton Council's annual preseason survey. I asked cotton agronomist Camp Hand from the University of Georgia's Extension Office to explain the decline and how it might impact the state's fourth most valuable agricultural product.
Yeah, so you might have seen the National Cotton Council number, which is probably, you know, pretty widely publicized now, but most things I'm hearing across the board are up to a 15 to 20% decrease in cotton acres in Georgia. And this, the numbers that are being thrown around are like alarmingly low. We hadn't planted that few cotton acres since 1993. So it is a big deal to see them throw numbers around that are below a million. But you know, the biggest thing is that cotton right now is selling. They look at futures. So for a December 2025 contract on cotton, you're looking between 69 and 70 cents a pound. And really, just to be quite honest with you, it doesn't make sense to plant a crop knowing that it takes 85 to 90 cents a pound to make it, and you're going to sell it for 70.
And what's driving the low prices? Do you know?
Yeah, so there's a few things. You know, Brazil had a really good crop last year. China had a record crop last year. And, you know, the supply is there and the demand is low.
So if you're a cotton grower and you're looking at this negative number, the futures price, what are your options? Can you plant something else? Do you plant and suffer a loss? What are the options for people?
Yeah, so that's the tough part in Georgia, is that really on dry land acres, you don't have but two options if you plan on harvesting the crop, and that's cotton and peanuts. For the last couple of years, people have maxed out their peanut rotations, and so, you know, that, it doesn't really make sense to go peanuts again, but people are going to do it, or they're going to plant cotton and not put much into it and get what they can, okay? But that's on dry land. On irrigated, we have options like switching up to soybeans or corn. The problem is that soybeans don't rotate well with peanuts because they're in the same plant family. And with any grain, if you're not set up for it, whether it's soybeans or corn or small grains or anything like that, if you don't have the equipment to harvest it or ways to store it or move it, then you could get stuck with it. And so the hardest part of all this is that we have the infrastructure for peanuts and cotton, and right now it don't make much sense to plant cotton unless you've got interest in a gin. And so some folks are going to plant cotton knowing that it is likely they're going to lose money and hoping that they make a good peanut crop to cover the loss.
And before we let you go, remind us again how big the cotton industry is in Georgia in terms of total production or in terms of a number of people employed, any number that you'd like to share.
All right, so some of the more recent numbers are close to $1 billion in farm gate value, but that only captures what the growers are getting. right? So $1 billion, but then you multiply that. It's got a 2.5 times multiplier effect in the forms of jobs, in the forms of apparel, and in all that kind of stuff, okay? So, I mean, if we start seeing these trends permanently, we're losing a lot of revenue in our state, okay? And so that's the biggest concern for me, is the future of the industry. And so I can't reiterate enough, we really need to be supporting the cotton industry right now.
Well, I appreciate your insight, and we'll certainly be thinking about our Georgia cotton-growing farmers. I appreciate it. Camp Hand, UGA Extension Agent. Thank you.
Sure thing, man.
Georgia public schools are short more than 5,300 teachers, and lawmakers are considering a new fix, bringing more retired teachers back to the classroom. Senate Bill 150 would let educators return just 60 days after retiring while keeping their pensions, expanding on an existing law that requires a year-long wait. The bill's sponsor, Republican State Senator Billy Hickman, calls it a temporary solution while schools work to fill vacancies.
We really got a teacher cliff. We got more people getting out than we have coming in, and it's a real issue, because if we don't have teachers, we don't have good teachers, we're not going to have students that's learning.
A Senate committee voted unanimously to pass the bill on for a cost analysis. However, it likely won't come up for further action until next year's legislative session. A recent survey from the Partnership to Fight Infectious Disease shows almost 70% of people are concerned about declining vaccination rates among children. This comes amid a measles outbreak in Texas that resulted in the death of a school-aged, unvaccinated child. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
The survey showed about 3/4 of American voters want FDA-approved vaccines to remain widely available. Candace DeMatteis is with the Partnership to Fight Infectious Disease. She says she became aware of how serious measles can be after experiencing an outbreak in college.
I literally was kicked out of class, had to go to the infirmary and get my vaccine, my MMR updated vaccine, or, you know, a booster, if you will, even though I'd been vaccinated, to prove that I was vaccinated to go back to class. No ill effects whatsoever.
DeMatteis says people should check with their healthcare provider to see if they are in need of an updated measles vaccine. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens delivered his annual State of the City business address last night. This year, his remarks focused on the city's work to revitalize neighborhoods through affordable housing and public safety efforts. GPB's Amanda Andrews has more.
Mayor Dickens told those in attendance he plans to make Atlanta the best place to raise children by providing jobs to young people, increasing affordable housing, and reducing crime. Since 2022, homicides have fallen by 26% in Atlanta. He says a safer city starts with housing and helping the homeless.
I promise to build or retain 20,000 units of affordable housing, and we are well on track to exceed that goal. We are building or have families already moved into over 11,000 housing units.
As part of those efforts, Dickens plans to open the Waterworks, a 100-unit supportive housing development, later this year. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
Respiratory viruses in Georgia are on the decline after a second winter peak, according to CDC data. Flu levels in wastewater have dropped by 40% statewide in the first 2 weeks of February, and hospitalizations also are falling after spiking earlier this month. But experts warn the flu remains unpredictable. At least 55 Georgians have died this season. Meanwhile, COVID-19 levels have risen slightly, and Georgia's measles outbreak remains at 3 confirmed cases. Public health officials continue to monitor trends across the state. A legal battle over the Atlanta Public Safety Training Center may be coming to an end. A federal appeals court has ordered both sides to weigh in on whether the case is now moot, since construction on the facility is now complete. Opponents had sued the city of Atlanta, arguing their First Amendment rights were violated when they were initially barred from gathering signatures for a referendum to stop the project. The city argues the lawsuit is now irrelevant because the center is built and already in use. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals decision could determine whether the case moves forward or is dismissed. A bill prohibiting Georgia Power from passing on the costs of providing electricity to data centers to residential and small business customers has cleared a state Senate committee. Senate Bill 34 comes in the wake of 6 rate increases in less than 2 years that have driven up what homeowners and small businesses pay by 37%. The legislation now goes to the Senate Rules Committee to schedule a floor vote. The biolab facility in Conyers remains partially closed nearly 5 months after a chemical fire forced thousands of residents to evacuate. While some operations have resumed, the company is now offering voluntary severance packages to employees. GPB's Pamela Kirkland has more.
Biolab says it has continued to pay employees since the September 29th fire, but with manufacturing still shut down, the company is offering voluntary separation packages for those who want to leave, while others are being reassigned to its distribution center or other locations. The September fire at Biolab forced more than 17,000 people to evacuate and led to widespread shelter-in-place orders. A federal investigation into the fire is ongoing. In a statement, Biolab says it will continue to, quote, complete our cleanup efforts and advance our community support initiatives. Local officials did not immediately respond to a request for comment. For GPB News, I'm Pamela Kirkland.
Now, this is not going to come as any surprise to anyone who drives on Atlanta roadways, but 9 Metro Atlanta interchanges rank among the nation's worst bottlenecks for freight trucks. That's according to the American Transportation Research Institute, which found that Atlanta's Spaghetti Junction, that's I-285 at 85 in the northeast quadrant, ranks the 4th worst in the entire country. The Cobb Cloverleaf, that's I-75 at 285 in the northwest, comes in at number 6, while I-20 at I-285 on the west side ranks number 10. The study highlights how congestion delays truckers, wastes fuel, and adds billions of dollars to shipping costs. Only Texas had more traffic bottlenecks than Georgia. Joann Fabrics has announced that it will close all its stores nationwide, including a dozen locations in Georgia. The decision comes as part of the company's Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings. The closures affect more than 800 stores nationwide. Initially, the company planned to keep some locations open while restructuring its debt, but recent developments in bankruptcy court have led to a complete shutdown. Cartersville, Georgia, in the northwestern part of our state, is being recognized as one of the country's most charming small towns. HGTV highlighted the city in Bartow County for its TELUS Science Museum, which features a life-size T-Rex and a massive megalodon jaw, and the Booth Western Art Museum, home to the largest collection of Western art in the Southeast. Visitors also can see the first-ever Coca-Cola wall ad in its historic downtown. And other attractions include Savoy Automobile Museum and the Red Top Mountain State Park. Cartersville joins Fairhope, Alabama, and Newbury, South Carolina, on HGTV's list. Get ready for a whole lot of soccer in Savannah. The Beer City Cup, the Asheville-based adult soccer tournament series that's the largest of its kind in the country, is hosting its 3rd annual event in Savannah next week. The sold-out event at Jennifer Ross Soccer Complex will involve 110 teams from 35 states and 5 countries. The players range from 18 to 70 years old. In basketball, Georgia fans who attended last night's 88-83 victory at home over number 3 Florida really wanted to storm the court after the final buzzer. It was, after all, an upset and a thriller of a game against a perennial rival. The Bulldogs trailed by 2 with about a minute to play, but then a 3-pointer put them ahead, and the team sealed the win on the free throw line. Georgia coach Mike White called it, quote, a big win. But you know what else is big? The fine that the Southeastern Conference levies against teams whose fans rush the court after games. So, as the excitement grew in the final minute, the public address announcer at Stegman Coliseum made repeated requests for fans to wait 90 seconds after the final buzzer to give the Gators and officials time to leave the court before they, the fans, could, yes, storm the court. And even more surprising than the win itself, fans actually followed instructions, waiting patiently 90 seconds before their on-court celebration, proving that it is possible to storm the court politely. Many in the crowd of 10,000 remained on the court for several minutes. There was no immediate word if the unusual post-game order would have any impact on the usual fine. And that's it for today's edition of Georgia Today. It's you who keep us in operation, and we enjoy your company, if virtually. If you'd like to learn more about what we do, visit gpb.org/news. You'll find many of the stories that we put on the podcast there. We'd like you to hit subscribe on this podcast if you haven't done so already. It helps you and it helps us by keeping us current with you in your feed. And if you have feedback, send that to us at georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Orlando Montoya. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.